This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Welcome to Your Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
So JoJo Siwa, who we've talked about. I love saying her name because it sounds like a medication
it sounds like a Pokemon character, doesn't it? A little bit.
I'll collect your JoJo Siwa.
Yeah.
Oh my god. But yeah. JoJo Siwa was a kid on Dance Moms, and right? Is that the show?
Oh
Dance
my
Moms?
God.
I don't know.
Michael and I were watching some of Dance Moms.
We were
binging it. Love. And then we stopped, so we haven't gotten to the JoJo Siwa years, but I am we know someone who like is in the dance world, and whenever we see him, we intentionally ask him all the questions about all the Dance Moms.
You know what's funny?
Siwa stuff.
I was at some party recently, and somebody was like, "I was like, do you want me to introduce you to that guy? He created Dance Moms." And I was like, "This
oh my
is
God.
Peak LA."
Did you like, say yes? Did you say yes?
I mean, I met him; he was lovely.
Yeah,
but it was like,
I would have said hard pass to that offer. Thank you very much.
I would have immediately said, hold on, let me finish my drink. I'm ready.
You would have thrown the Draco over your face, sort of like a...
Let's go.
Mr. Dance Moms? So JoJo Siwa was a kid on Dance Moms and is now a bona fide celebrity and was... We love her. I love her. She came out.
Do you love her?
Yes, I love her. I think
do
she's
we
so...
Love her?
What is there to love? I don't mind her. I have enough to love her.
I can tell you I love her. I love her because she's forced her way into my life to know who she is. And I honestly love her because of one thing. When she came out, this was my favorite. This is like my favorite thing.
I remember when she came out,
she started getting comments, I guess, on her page or wherever whatever it was, Instagram or I don't know what.
Yeah.
And people started commenting homophobic sentiments about her being out and like her effect on kids and her response to them. It's the most brilliant response. All she said was every time, okay, just okay with an exclamation point, and it's perfect. You are acknowledging that you've heard this homophobic rant or whatever it is, and you're not saying fuck you. You're not saying like you're not doing anything. You're just saying okay. There's nothing. You can't have a fight based off of that. And I think, I thank JoJo Siwa for that moment.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's the
best.
But
now she's annoying as fuck.
Well, she's rebranding herself. She does music, as well as dance, and she's out, and she's trying to do a sort of Miley Cyrus-esque rebrand. The edgy rebrand, as we've seen.
It's not going well.
Alan is very anti JoJo Siwa. Elliot's very
no. I just find it. I find it laughable, like, because it's just, you can tell it's someone who doesn't have a team, it seems. It doesn't, like, at least when Miley did it, when Miley made that transition, it was shocking, but it was cool. And it was like, and she had talent to back it up. And now it's sort of like, because it seems like JoJo Siwa is just trying to be the fifth member of KISS.
Well, dude. Does.
I mean, am I wrong?
She does look like she's in the in KISS. She's done that. I mean, and Brent, I don't know if you know what she looks like, but she's like tall and blonde and famously wears like pigtails and like
She has like a receding hairline from the fucking fucking ponytail on top. Yeah. She's been pulling it so many years.
She is a grown dance kid, and that's what she's just a character, you know? It's so funny that her name is JoJo Siwa. But anyway, so all of this being said, the reason that this has sort of become a thing is that she's released this new song, Karma, where she does indeed look like Gene Simmons' daughter. And she's calling it gay pop. She said in an interview with Billboard that she's starting to make a new genre of music called gay pop. And as a music fanatic, obviously, I was like, oh, this is going to get some blowback. And of course it did. Because we live in a world now where there are so many out queer acts that have sort of, you know, harnessed that energy, that vibe. Tegan and Sara, Troye Sivan, Orville
Peck. Tay Two.
I don't know. I don't know if you saw this, but when JoJo, and this is what I think made me cringe so hard for JoJo Siwa, and it made me love Tegan and Sara so much more, is when JoJo Siwa made this comment. Tegan and Sara did a TikTok or an Instagram, I forget what it was, where it's JoJo Siwa making the comment, and then it cuts to Tegan and Sara, and they're just like,
they're just standing there.
I mean, you know how ridiculous that statement is, girl.
Well, that's why people are like, hold. I mean, obviously, everybody is in a place where they are dying to just tear down the next person online. But it is true. Like, obviously, gay pop has always existed from Madonna to George Michael to Sam Smith. You know, we don't need to.
Lorena McKennitt. I mean, we don't have to Lorena name McKennitt. Names.
But, you know, in a time of, like, Kylie Minogue resurfacing, you know, with her song, and then Charlie XCX and Sam Smith and Kim Petras, like, all of this gay pop is sort of living in the atmosphere. And it's just very funny that she said gay pop. And so when she did, yes, there was this big groundswell
It's not even recent, too. Protest. Like, it's like you just have to look to Sylvester doing great pop disco in the 70s, 80s. Yeah. Like Boy
the
George.
Village People.
Like, I mean, literally, like there are so many. Elton John. There are so many examples.
Did you know when you were younger, how long until I'm admitting here that I didn't realize the Village People were like gay until more recently?
I don't think I ever seriously gave the Village People any thought throughout my childhood.
I always liked YMCA. They play that song a lot at baseball games, so I remember an early stage in my life being like, I like this song.
But that's the thing. Like, it was – I know you guys think it's funny when I use the word subversive, but I didn't put together that these were, like, super gay Greenwich Village archetypes.
But was that – that wasn't because they're subversive. That was because you had a disconnect to the knowledge of the 70s gay scene, right?
I think so. Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
I think that too.
Because in the 70s, it was pretty clear what they were representing for people who were in the know. You know what I mean?
There's a Native American guy with like a headdress. Was that big in the Village? In the 70s?
That wasn't necessarily, but like they were sort of meant to sort of be that tongue-in-cheek guys just masculine. Out to have fun.
Yeah.
You know, we're just a bunch of guys sort of thing. I do want to say something about Sam Smith here, though, because he was in a similar situation to JoJo Siwa.
Excuse me.
They, when they won the Oscar, I don't know, a couple years ago what movie was it? The James Bond movie. They said that they were like the first queer person to win best song or something like that, and literally Elton John was like, hi. I did this 20 years ago.
It's pretty wild. I think
if you're gonna throw that into your pre-written speech, like, you have to just Google it, because Google will give you the answer. Like, there is something so embarrassing about that to me.
There's also a level of arrogance to it that I think, you know, you need to know who came before you. I mean, I don't think you need to necessarily, but you can't make these blanket statements and be a part of this community if you're not gonna. And I say community in terms of, for them, the, you know, the queer side of the musical community and musicians that, like, if you're not gonna know the people that sort of paved the way for you, It feels ignorant, and it feels sort of like arrogant in a lot of ways that they just choose not to.
Well, JoJo Siwa did step it back and said, "I just want to make it more clear that gay pop is a genre." And she said, "If I said to somebody name a gay pop artist, they'd go, 'What's gay pop?'" So she walked it back.
Oh, I was confused there. I was like, isn't all pop gay?
But I think she's acknowledging now that. I mean, she's acknowledging the history that precedes her, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with her. I'm fine with her.
I think she's
fine with her. I don't think she's a delight, but I'm totally fine with her existing in the realm that she exists in. And, you know, I support her going out, being that fifth member of KISS and wearing the platform boots and the face stuff and all of the stuff. But I'm also like, please don't compare the transition to what Miley did, because Miley is perfect and she did it perfectly, and you can never come close to Miley Cyrus.
She didn't do it perfectly. She did it once. The first time she did it, it was sort of clunky and like became.
Wait, what first time? What do you mean?
The first time she went from like kid pop star to like sexy.
Like 2012, you mean? 2013? No,
I don't think it was clunky.
No. This was before. And then when she did Bangers, when she really did it in a more
adult way,
that's when it was like a slam dunk.
Oh, sure. She had those like moments when she was still doing Hannah that she was trying to get that pop crossover adult thing. I get that. But no one really... I don't think anyone even points to that. They point to Bangers as the moment in which she made that transition and she busted down that door. Even in my interview with Dolly Parton, when she was talking about that and how hard that was for Miley to do that and how brave it was for her to do that. Like, that's how you really do it. Like, that's how you do it. And then now look at her. Like, she's everything.
What the hell is Bangers? Is that like her biggest album?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's time to add to the click wheel.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Not even joking.
Well, we are joined today by a beloved friend of the podcast, improviser, actor, and comedian, and also, as we'll get into in just a minute, foster parent, Kevin DeBacker. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us.
As you were known as a child, Kevin Tobacco DeBacker,
right.
We just learned.
I know you're trying to sting me for my childhood, but it's not working.
It's not working. Because that is an oddly sexy nickname for a 10-year-old. Absolutely.
Nice to see you guys. It's been a long time. Especially with Alan. I feel like we saw each other a lot more in L.A. when I first moved here. Mm-hmm. I think it's been 10 years, which is wild.
No, it has not been 10 years since we've seen each other.
Disappeared.
I think it's probably been like maybe 5 years. I definitely pandemic, which would be almost 5 years, I guess, next year. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Almost 5 years, but it's actually 4. But yes, you're right.
Because we had another friend, Lyle, we would hang out with a bit. And then I think she moved on. I don't know where she went, but everyone
does. She's in Virginia.
Wow.
Ooh.
Beloved friend of the podcast, Lyle. Well, actually, speaking of seeing each other, I ran into Kevin at a party recently by a party of past guests of the podcast, Joan Hartman, beloved friend of the podcast. But it was so good to see you. I know. It was so good to see you, Kevin, and you're such a delight, such a like wonderful presence in my life, and you've always sort of represented really what I like in gay men. But you blew me away
No, sorry. No, like you are the kind of gay person that I like as a person. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take the compliment, but we might want to dig deeper.
Right. Yeah. That said, you blew me away because you mentioned, and I didn't know this, that you were a foster parent, which is a theme that we've talked about many times on the podcast, but never really dived too deep on it. And I haven't met a lot of gay men in my life who are foster parents. So I kind of wanted to have a conversation with you about what that process has been like. but let's sort of start at the very beginning of, like, when did this happen for you and your partner, and what was your decision-making process on that? Like,
honestly, it came down to money in the beginning. 'Cause we were like, you know, it'd be really great to have a kid. And then when you find out how expensive it is, to go through surrogacy, it's like, it could be up to a couple hundred thousand dollars. And then there's never a guarantee. Wow. Like, you might have to spend more money. And then we were like, we could do straight adoption, but let's try foster to adopt and see how that works. Yeah. And it's like the Wild West when you start Googling it and you're like, I don't even know where to begin. There's no concrete information anywhere.
Wow.
It just feels like a very confusing experience. So I think we spent months just digging around on the internet, trying to figure it out.
Finding like decent Reddit threads and like weaning as much information as you could and then taking it from there. That's a surprise to me.
You know, I do want to say something about the surrogacy price, because like it blows me away that in this country, you know, there is sort of like yes, there's definitely an assault on family planning and birth control and all kinds of situations. However, for queer men specifically, like if insurance covers, you know, the delivery of a baby, even the process of, like, you know, checking if you're pregnant, all these different things, like, shouldn't insurance also cover the surrogacy search as well? Like, that should be a part of the process. You know what I mean? If family planning's so important, like, maybe that should be a part of Obamacare. I'm just saying.
I mean, we said the same thing, because my partner Alex, he was got a new job, and we were like, oh, maybe they'll cover surrogacy. And it just seemed like there might have been some weird writing that said it was kind of only for heterosexual couples. So we're like, I don't think it's for us.
A little bizarre. This is rural Oklahoma surrogacy center.
Wouldn't that be fun?
And then on top of it too, you also are not taking into account the emotional toll that comes with surrogacy, any of these processes, of course, but you know, when you're doing surrogacy and it is hundreds of thousands of dollars, it's like, I don't know. I mean, whenever I think of my gay friends who have gotten pregnant or used surrogacy or adoption, it's so hard, because there's just peaks and valleys, and you're trying to care for a child who's not even in the world yet.
Particularly for men.
Do you think the family burden planning for gay men is higher? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because in so many states, too. I mean, famously, that, I think, was part of what started Rosie O'Donnell's coming out. It all comes back to Rosie. Rosie O'Donnell's coming out process is that she had a real big problem with sort of, it was like, it started with the very specific intent to not let gay men adopt or foster or something in Florida. And then, of course, it spiraled into the bigger issue that it became. But, like, just in general, too. I mean, I've seen so many stories of just sort of adoption agencies frowning upon single men, you know, gay men, but single men particularly wanting to adopt.
Yeah, it's so crazy to me to think there's such a need. Like, in the foster care system, there's, I think, over 30,000 kids that are, like, needing a home per year. And you're like, and then to think of other states that might have these restrictions against gay couples bringing a kid to their life, into their home, and protecting them and taking care of them, just seems so strange that you would deny that.
It's also so funny, too, because I've always thought it's just, there's an irony to the idea of gay men and women, of course, but gay men as being seen as somehow more dangerous. But ultimately, like, when you're really pursuing parenthood, you know, as a queer person or as a gay person, like, the irony of being told you're more of a threat is so ridiculous, because ultimately you're going through all the motions to acquire being a parent in ways that can be, you know, spiritually excruciating, you know, like you're putting in all the effort to make it happen, rather than if it's, you know, easy or perhaps a mistake or not, or unplanned or whatever, you know, it's like,
right.
It's just easy.
Yeah, it's like a very thought, like it's a really thought out adventure. Like I'm in my 40s. It's like we really thought through this. Do we have the resources, the means to do this? Do we have a nice, stable home? You know, all these things that I feel like other people probably don't have to think about as much.
Yeah.
Well, and fostering in general, like my mom is adopted, and part of her whole childhood, her process of even being adopted was the horror stories of going through the foster care system and sort of bouncing from home to home to home. And she, I mean, I think she was in like, I think 4 or 5 different homes before they finally settled on a home that didn't even happen through foster. And it happened through an adoption agency. And so fostering is such a hugely misunderstood process of the adoption process. And in a lot of ways, it's not even a part of the adoption process. Yeah. Did you learn a lot about the fostering process that maybe you didn't know as you went through it?
Yeah, we learned a ton. There's so much information and we're still learning more, but there is like the separate sort of like, I want to foster and that's all I want to do. And then there's I want to foster to adopt. And then there's, I just want to adopt. And the adoption track is like different, where you might get an adoption lawyer and you would specifically link up with a mom who chooses you. The mom says, I like these guys or, you know, this couple. And then you kind of go through it together. And then that happens that way. I think that's about $60,000 or maybe $70,000 for that. And then the foster program is kind of like once we did all this training, like you had to do first aid, CPR, home inspections, background checks. They even called our therapist. our couple's therapist that we didn't like. Who was unreachable. He couldn't reach him. But yeah, there was just like a lot of stuff. And then it's like, okay, we prepared our home for 0 to 8 years old because we were like, you know, we're open to these ranges. Yeah. I was even open to 16 years old, but my partner was like, I think that might be a little old for us.
Can I ask you real quick, can you give like an age range and they will respect that? Oh,
yeah, they'll respect it. I think they respect it to a little bit. Like they were... We just said like we only have space for one, and we would get calls for like 3 siblings or 2. And then you get these calls and you feel terrible because they'll say like, oh, this child has a sister and they're both on needing like breathing supplemental oxygen tubes. Yeah, it's like lots of medical care. And you're like, I don't know if I can handle this. You feel terrible. And then when we got the call for our foster kid, it was like drug exposed, various drugs in the system. And you're just kind of scared because you don't know what that really means. Yes. And that was like the fourth yes we had said yes to. And the other ones just didn't go our way. Oh. And then like she showed up and we were like, oh, my God, she's beautiful. We love her.
Oh, that's great. It's surreal to me, though, to think that it sounds like the foster system in L.A. sounds like you're auditioning for a movie. I mean, there's like all these points where someone can object and you can say yes and then they say no. I mean, that's why I guess I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, there's like this, we're going through a private agency is what they call them. So there's like these subcontracted agents that deal with DCFS personally, the county. And the county's just so overwhelmed, so it's hard to go directly through them because they get so many people, they can't keep up. And we have a special caseworker who directly communicates with them. And then we just have a ton of paperwork, too. I was going to say, like, anybody who's interested in this, there's a lot of paperwork. You have to document every month any medicines. You have to document the visits with the family. You have to document how many clothes you bought. A lot of paperwork involved.
Yeah. There's also, I mean, on the flip side of that, Brent, when you said the auditioning part, like, there is also an element of it. On the fostering side, I mean, there are a lot of people who I think the laws in California are different, but in a lot of states, it can be potentially easy to abuse the system. And there is like is it a tax break or some sort of like financial benefit for often fostering certain kids in certain states? And that there's a danger then of people abusing necessarily the system and it going in a bad direction.
Terrible. In terms of
how much money are we talking here? How much money is it?
Well, I can't not think of Brent crunching numbers because I listened to the episode where you talked about you're downloading songs for $1. And so now I just think of you constantly crunching numbers everywhere you go. And I'm not mad about it because I do a little bit myself.
Now, triplets. If we're talking triplets, I'd have to obviously.
Yeah, let me get that pen busy here. But Alan, there is like a bit of that. And the foster kid with us was removed from the prior home before us. And and because they suspected that might have been going on, kind of like,
oh wow,
yeah.
Where, and that's so hard on the kid because I mean, the kids soak up so much of that stuff, yeah, and so much of that energy and all of that, that it just, it's so hard on them.
Yeah, like with your mom, I can't believe she had to deal with so many homes. I think that that's got to do something to you at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure. And then also when you finally get adopted and you realize that you were just sort of like, in her case, they wanted my mom's younger sister because she was younger, but my mom was older, but they had to be adopted together. And it was like, so there was always that feeling of like, well, I'm not even wanted in this situation.
Oh, my
I just
God.
Had to come along.
That's good. That's a normal way to treat this. We want that one. We have to take that one. We'll be mean to that one. It's like,
but in a lot of ways, that's how the system kind of works sometimes with parents, where they're very – and that's why I think queer parenting is so like – is something that should be so embraced because it's we have to choose to have children in a very direct way. In a very direct way. Yeah. And it's like – and in a lot – I don't want to say – I mean, it's probably – this is the first time we've ever said this on this podcast. But in terms of parenting, when a queer person wants to parent, they're maybe not always as choosy as other areas of the queer community can be in other situations. And so it's sort of like a – it's a blessing in a lot of ways that it's like, give them access. Mm-hmm. Let them have fun in this world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
to me, I don't see it as being I also kind of lump it together with couples who do IVF and how that in and of itself is an excruciating process for couples to go through and how difficult it can be. And again, the emotional toll that it takes. So when you are pursuing parenthood that hard, it really does have a sense of nobility to it that I think, totally deserves to be recognized.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh,
go ahead.
I thought you could say something. No, I totally agree. I think it's so crazy that gay men wouldn't be more in the picture. You know, and lesbians too, I imagine, probably go through a bit of it too. But yeah, it is like what you're saying just kind of reminds me of like, I don't know. It's my brain's a little foggy right now. Sorry about that. Yeah, I think it's just like, it's been a crazy experience. And I really, what we're finding too, is we're finding more and more gay parents are getting into this. And when I grew up, I didn't know any gay people. Then when I was in my 20s and 30s, I didn't know anybody with kids. And now I'm finding more and more of my gay friends are having kids. I don't know if you guys are finding that.
Fully. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have three gay friends and they don't have kids. Yeah. But yes, I'm with.
That's just Elliot, with you, Allen, and somebody else.
Elliot, Allen, and David Smitheman do not know. I have more than three, but I don't have many more than three. I'll throw out.
Wait, what's been the fun of it? Oh, go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Let's table that for a second. I did want to ask you, Kevin, I love how when I give you a compliment, Alan, you always seem put off by it.
But I'm giving you back what you give off as well here. That's why I do it, because that's exactly what you do.
Right, you belong in prison. What was it like when you met your partner? However, I'm forgetting exactly when you guys met. I think it was a few years ago. You were telling me at the bar. Like, was this something that you guys talked about very quickly? Like, did you know? Early on in your relationship that this was sort of a must have, I really want someone who's open to kids? Or did you guys both just have a really strong connection and you kind of evolved into, you know, creating a home for someone?
Yeah, it was like I had always wanted kids. Like when I was in my 20s, I was especially living in New York, I saw these little kids getting pulled around in sleds. You know, I just thought, oh man, this is so cute. What an easy
part of New York. There was no snow. Yeah. That's a fair mind. This is just New York.
They were just on trash can top.
Trash can being pulled around.
Kevin, that was Sesame Street. That was an episode of Sesame Street.
You were watching television.
Oh my God. Is that what I was doing? I never left my building. I live my life through TV. Yeah, it was just like this thing I was thought, but I had no idea what it was really like. And then time went by. I was like, oh, I guess it's just not part of my life. I hadn't met anybody who wanted it, and I hadn't found a stable partner that lasted. And then I met Alex, and it just started with simply hitting it off and being like, oh, wow, we have a lot to talk about. We enjoy having sex together. That's pretty exciting. Like,
no, I haven't had one of those yet, but yeah, continue.
Yeah. I always felt like it was rough when dating, when you'd be like, oh man, I really enjoy one or the other, but the both aren't working as well. And then we slowly, after being together for a while, we're like, this is something we're really into, but it didn't happen until much later when we both really started to talk about it. And we're like, it's okay if it doesn't happen, but let's give it a shot.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really awesome.
So nobody said, like, while you were having that great sex, let's make a baby.
We were trying so hard.
Somehow it didn't happen.
Wait,
but what is the, like, since, I mean, now that you're in this process fully and you have this beautiful child, how, I think, well, two things. What's like the joy part of it? Like what are some of the great things? Because you do have to go through a lot of stress to have this all happen. But then also on top of that, because I don't feel like there's a lot of explanation for the process after the child is in your home. Like, is it leading to adoption? Is there a chance that the child have to be moved again? Like, what's that process like too?
Yeah, well, the joy, I think, is every morning I wake up, I'm like the morning dad because I'm up early. And she's kind of like smiling or laughing in her room. And then I go in and she just has like the biggest grin every single morning. And I don't understand, why is this cute being happy all the time?
So happy.
I'm not.
Give her a sled. Give her a sled.
Yeah, you know? Got a like, trash can lid and bring her around South Pasadena. Yeah. She's just so happy and smiling. And like we live where there's like a horse ranch right behind our windows. Like you just look out and it's randomly a horse ranch. It's
Does
not
it
great
smell like shit?
The windows. Yeah.
Yeah.
It can
okay.
smell
yeah.
bad at different times.
Yeah.
But like
yeah.
we point her to the, every morning I have a ritual, like point her to the horses yeah. and like let her learn to love them or hate them. And then she's just kind of like hands to the windows looking out. And then I have she likes to touch the lamp. So we have like little rituals we do in the morning where she touches things. And I just feel like the mornings are amazing with her. I think all day is amazing, but seeing her like laugh at our jokes, you know, especially and they're not like you know, you don't, you just have to be move a lot. I feel like it's not really about wordplay.
Yeah.
It's just like physical movements.
It doesn't have to be immaterial, but you're getting you're getting good laughs. Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem
how old is she? Can I ask
she's
you?
8 months. And she was born premature, so she's kind of, the doctors always say there's like an adjusted age. Like she's 6 months or she's 8 months. She's just, it's like she's always happy. I love seeing her smile. It's like a beautiful, beautiful thing. And you feel really responsible for this thing. It's kind of giving me the purpose of like, a lot of things I used to care about so much, I don't really think about. I just think about protecting her and raising her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will it lead to adoption?
We hope so, but it's like, it could be, we've heard it could take a year and a half. It could take a year, but every 6 months.
Before what?
Before you might officially be able to adopt. And so the reason why it takes a while is they have these sort of check-ins and they're checking for family. Their first priority is like, do mom and dad want them? And if they do, are they addicted? And in this case, they are. And so then it's like, okay, what about other relatives? They check around. They're checking tribes, local tribes to see, is she part of a tribe? And it's just like, it's just takes a long time. Meanwhile, the mom, in this case, is trying to get clean, but hasn't been successful, in and out of rehab. And so she's trying, but also it's been unsuccessful. And so they'll like reevaluate 6 months and they'll say, okay, what's been going on? And then they'll check the records and be like, I don't know. And then they'll give her more time, you know? So it's just a lot of time to see if she can get her life back on track.
Now, if you don't, I kind of want to dive into that a little bit. What is that dynamic like? Because you are clearly building a relationship with this child but I also would imagine there's a part of you that, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, there's a part of you that wants her parents to get clean and be a part of her life. But then also that could be really destructive for you guys. I mean, it could just be really emotionally taxing for you if they do get clean and you give her back. Like what's that like, that kind of that dichotomy there?
No, I think it sucks. It's like you feel so emotionally attached to them and you are rooting for. Yeah, it's like I'm rooting for our success. But you're also like, oh, but then every time I root for myself, I'm rooting against the bio parents.
Right. Sure, you root for them as parents or as people, but you're also so obviously concerned for your child, for your foster child's well-being.
Yeah.
It's so hard. That must be so difficult.
It's so difficult, and I think because the parent involved is at this point not fit, and it's very clear, but maybe time will tell and the parent might get better, and but like right now you're like, oh, I'm so scared the idea of her going back, you know, there's no way, it's so it would be such a scary, dangerous environment, but there you kind of wear two hats where you're like, I guess she might go back at some point, and you have to accept that, and then the other part's like, I kind of really hope it goes our way, so you really are going back and forth all the time.
That would be really hard.
It would be very difficult to also not lean into bonding. Like, you're going to, obviously, you're bonding. Like, you're in.
It's, I mean, it's a baby. You can't not.
Yeah. And you're, there's like, love there. That's so difficult.
It's difficult. And then everyone around you is like, oh, you're, that's your daddy. And then here's your grandma. And you're like, well, we're not really. You know, we're just an extension of the county protecting her. And if the mom can get life back, then she goes back. Yeah.
Wow. Alan, I'm going to correct you actually just for a second. You said it's a baby. I cannot. I will have you know, I am incredible at holding babies and not feeling any emotional attachment to them. I'll just have you know, sir. How dare you?
Babies. He holds babies like this, like cats that are about to claw his face. No,
I was going to say, Brent, I hope this doesn't come off as offensive, but I assumed you would be the one who'd be least comfortable with a baby. Am I right? Out of the three of you?
You are 100% correct.
And the baby would be least comfortable with him.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with kids, I think. I think I'm okay around kids. I mean, I have to admit, I dislike most of them, but sure. I'm comfortable around children, and I feel like children like me in the short amount of time that I get to spend with them.
Do you have?
Sorry, Kevin.
Well, I was going to say, do you have nieces and nephews, Alan?
I do. I don't remember half their names because three of them, like they look like children from The Shining, and so they frighten me. But two of them are great. In fact, it was just his birthday.
Okay.
Oh, nice. Do you send him?
It's birthday. One of them.
Do you
send him money on his birthday, Alan?
Yeah, well, I don't send money. I send a gift. I don't send him. No,
they don't need money.
No,
send
I actually like, care. I
send
them
like press on nails or so. Send them press on nails.
No.
what is the nomenclature, Kevin? Like, are you supposed to interview your daughter as your foster daughter? Are you supposed to say you're supposed to clarify that? What is the protocol for being a foster parent?
I think when it comes to Trader Joe's employees, I'm like, oh yeah, they're like, she looks just like you,
sir.
I'm like, yeah. Yep, she's got my hair. If it wasn't gray anymore, I had red hair at one point. And then when it comes to like closer friends, I would say, oh, it's a foster. She's our foster daughter, or we're called resource parents now. I think they've tried to
resource foster. What does that mean?
It's just like you're the. I don't know.
It's like resource. Because I remember resource being where the kids who needed extra help went in school. Like the that's what they called.
Center. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah.
Resource parent the way I have an air of an arrogance about me, or a sort of expectation where somebody asks what breed my dog is, and I go, I don't know. He's a rescue. I don't know. I rescued.
I don't know. Yeah, just rescue
girls.
Her. Yeah,
she's a rescue. I'm a resource parent, so
yeah. So I guess right before we wrap up, I wanted to give you like what is there a pitch? Is there something you would want to tell our tens of thousands of listeners who might be actually intrigued by foster parenting? Is there something that you tell people, like a way to kind of sell them on the concept?
I would say just be prepared for such an emotional journey and a lot of paperwork. But I find it completely rewarding. I don't know if you ask me in a year and she's not with us, then I'll probably change my mind. But I'm really happy we did it. I would say just be really serious about it if you want to do it. And I'm totally open if anybody wants to reach out to me and ask questions, any of your listeners, like, I'm curious about it because I can give you all the pros and cons in a long email or short one. People don't want a long
email.
What
a wonderful
offer. I also want to add a question that Brent left out, which is, in his words, you have an infant, but the foster agency still gave you Narcan. Tell us why.
They're really bad at deciphering like ages. They give us, they're like, lock up your knives, you know, and they have weekly, monthly checks. And they're like, you know, everything. They gave us a Narcan. We have to lock up any drugs in a triple lock. It's like a triple lock system. So they do not discriminate infant versus 18-year-old.
She's you know a what's little crazy little about that? We also have to do that for Brent with Grindr. Whenever he's not allowed to use
and
it,
Narcan.
It's triple lock.
Yeah, it's got to be behind three locks with the magnet tape removal.
This sounds like a joke. Alan's really ragging on me today, but I'm going to give him this. It sounds like a joke, but it is true. Alan has the password to my phone, and I'm only allotted 40 minutes on Grindr per day. And that has actually been a lifesaver for me. Thank you again, Alan, for that.
Kevin, I'm, I got,
I'm sorry. Cutting everyone off. Kevin, this has been so enlightening and such a delight. And, you know, let me just say, you're a hero. You're so brave.
Seriously, you are really amazing.
Oh my God,
yeah.
Both on stage and off. Uh-huh. Kevin DeBacker, where can people find you on the internet, and where can people take you up on that offer to slide into your DMs, not with nudes, but with questions about foster parents?
I mean, also with nudes, too.
Yeah, why not? I have a bunch of Instagrams I've started and can't remember passwords or deleted, so I'd say that's not a good way to go. But I have started a Substack called, what is it called? Photos and Stories, which is, I was like, I'm going to be so creative and come up with the coolest name. And that's all I came up with. But you could find me there. I literally wrote down like 20 ideas. And then I was like, this is the one.
That sounds like an improv bit. You know what I mean? Let's think of the most interesting, creative, unique Substack name. Photos and Stories.
Oh,
it was,
all right.
It was a sad affair, Alan. I really was like, I was like, the talents, the juices have left my body. I don't know where they get. I have nothing.
Well,
left.
Because the juice. I'm not going to say that joke. Sorry, go on.
All right, we'll save it for another time. But yeah, they can reach out there, and then there's like a DM feature, and we can talk about it. I would give my email too, I think. Yeah, why not? KRDBacker, my last name, @gmail.com. And then that way, if anybody has any questions, yeah, do it.
Wonderful. Well,
thank you so much, Kevin.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
And another thing.
So, recently, I was driving, as one does in Los Angeles.
Throwing pennies at other drivers?
Yeah, no, I was I was driving, as I do, safely and well.
This is Elliot driving well.
There's a lot of rage and a lot of poor decisions. But anyway.
This is Brent in my car.
Holding on for dear life, like casually reminding you that you need to brake because someone is, you know,
have you ever gotten into a car accident with me?
Well, that's not the litmus test for whether you're a good driver.
Wait, Brent, I can add to this though. Elliot, you got in a car accident in my car.
Your car, and by the way, that was the second accident he had been in that year.
That was not a car accident. That was me scraping. I was backing out, and I scraped the car.
It required an accident. Technically, is an accident.
Yeah, but not one that was between me and another driver.
Just anyway, a car and
blah,
a building.
Blah, blah.
Wait. Can I focus on this before we move on? I have spent in my entire life cumulative, like 90 minutes in Elliot's car. Because we don't spend 2 hours, 3 hours. And the litmus test for whether he's a good driver is, have I gotten in an accident while you were in my car? And the answer to that is always going to be no. You don't get into dozens of accidents at all times.
Elliot is a fine driver.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot is just incredibly aggressive, which then makes him not always the best driver.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And Elliot, we tease you lovingly, of course.
I know, it's fine. But I was genuinely just driving on, I was trying to merge onto the freeway. And this guy in a Tesla made it so that I couldn't merge.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was crazy because it's like, you're making it dangerous for me. You're making it worse, man. I hadn't done anything. I was just in my car merging onto the freeway, and this guy made it hard. And so then when I finally got in, I literally looked and he gave me the finger.
Yeah.
I just couldn't, it was so, I haven't really encountered anything like that since Queens, like Long Island or Queens, where people go out of their way to give you the, finger, and to cut you off or to endanger you. And so I was thinking, like, is this now with the onslaught of fucking, what are those stupid cars called? The Cybertruck? The Tesla Cybertruck?
Oh, yeah.
Seeing those around LA. 4,000
of those, though. We're
calling all of them because the pedal gets stuck.
Yeah.
But yeah. I wonder.
Which pedal?
The gas pedal or the brake pedal?
Because the gas pedal getting stuck is better. Wow.
The gas pedal, yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently also my friend told me that Teslas can be synced up to dance, to kind of like dance together, or like if they're all near each other, they'll like do a dance, like a thing where the windows go up and down and they flash at the same time, like the cars at Disneyland. So anyway, all that aside, my question is, does being a Tesla owner make you an asshole? In spite of the fact that Teslas are carbon neutral.
Here's the thing. Of the three of us, I'm the only one that drives an electric car.
Some of us take mass transit, which is even better for the environment.
That is even better. Yes, but I live in Los Angeles, so I'm a normal person with a car. I was looking at Teslas when I was looking for a car. I'll admit that, because you can't not look for, if you're looking for an electric car, you can't not include Teslas in your search. They're great cars. They're the model of sort of like how electric cars should be. But one of the things that made me really sort of like, I don't know, I guess I'm just a practical car person in that, like, I wanted something that was like a normal car experience, that felt like the size of a normal car, that felt like a practical car that I could put stuff in and not feel weird about. And like, I felt cramped in Teslas, but then I also just got like, kind of just like, it just felt icky. The whole process of like a Tesla situation just felt icky. And now with everything with Elon Musk, I think it's impossible to separate yourself from Elon Musk if you're driving a Tesla. And so you can't help but not judge Tesla people. And I think Tesla people have this sort of like cult of personality arrogance sometimes to them, where they're like, I'm driving this. It's like back in the day when everyone had the Toyota Priuses, and there was like, they were everywhere in LA, and everyone had a Toyota Prius, and it was just sort of like this cult of personality with Toyota Priuses. Yeah. It just felt very strange. But now it's like even worse with Elon Musk.
The Trader Joe's parking lot on a Saturday afternoon in Los Angeles in 2015 was exclusively Priuses. It was just insane. So I just want to throw, I'm gonna pull an Alan. I'm gonna rain on your parade for a second. Teslas are not carbon neutral, because, well, first of all, a lot of energy goes into creating a car, of course, and that can't be avoided. We live in a car-driven society. But also, a lot of energy goes into powering the Tesla. It is certainly, an electric car is absolutely better for the environment than a gas-powered engine, but it doesn't mean it's carbon neutral. So I just want to throw that out there. That said, what I like that Tesla did is that I like that they kind of gave a shot in the arm to focusing environmentally friendlier cars and making them fun. I think the lead up to Tesla was the big three dragging their feet, making boring cars that people weren't inspired by. And then I think more importantly, there was this obsession with advertising to people who were going to get who were in the market to perhaps buy a hybrid or something, by basically touching upon altruism, which is such a terrible way to motivate people otherwise. What Tesla did is they created this really cool, luxurious, fast, kick-ass car that everyone liked, and it, I think, gave a shot in the arm to the entire industry to fucking hurry up and make more electric cars. So that said, I think that's a good thing, to commodify, like, the electric car industry.
Yeah.
But Elon Musk has become a fucking nightmare, and he's his own worst enemy. And Tesla's had a really bad I just started following like stocks like a year ago. Sometimes I read business news because it stresses me out a little bit less than like other news. And Tesla's had a really bad like 8 months. I don't think they're going to disappear anytime soon. Certainly not. But they are really struggling. And I think that's because Elon Musk is the ultimate piece of shit at that company. And he's turned off the perhaps largely coastal liberals that are wealthy coastal liberals that are buying his cars most often.
Yeah. Well, he's also like, he's making it so that, like, for example, when you drive an electric car, you know, on a longer journey, from here to San Diego, from here to San Francisco, here to Las Vegas, whatever it is, there are lots of, I mean, and Biden administration is putting in even more and more charging stations, and that's great. There's more happening. However, Elon Musk is creating, and again, this speaks to the cult of personality, this sort of like separate status for that only Teslas can go charge in sort of Tesla charging spots. But of course, Teslas can also charge everywhere else as well. But the cars that aren't Teslas can't charge in the Tesla lots. So it creates this sort of like, it intentionally creates this animosity between what should be a good thing, meaning transferring us to more sort of like energy efficient electric cars, hybrid, et cetera, et cetera. Like, that should be the direction we're going in, and not creating this weird, because I don't think that ever really has happened with cars, other than, of course, like luxury cars, of course. Like, you get jealous of the person with the fancy car and everything, but there's never been a situation in the history of automotives where a car had to go to a fancier gas station because they could only have that type of gas, and you wanted to be at that gas station because of it. You know what I mean? Like, that never has happened before, and Elon Musk has kind of created animosity within the worlds of even people driving electric cars.
Yeah.
There is an irony too to the fact that he is the scion of this electric car and is also this, like, I don't know if you call him right wing or contrarian libertarian, like
contrarian libertarian.
Contrarian libertarian seems right. I mean, I want to say he's a genius, and I think he probably is, but I also just think he's just like, I don't know enough about him to say that he actually is a genius. I don't think he actually is. I just think he's sort of an arrogant, rich person who was able to amass a lot of really smart people and benefit off their intelligence.
Yeah, maybe that is,
brilliance. I'll never forget, I knew a guy, I had befriended this guy on Grindr. This was a while ago, so I was probably 30, and he just graduated college, chill out. But regardless, he got a job. By the way, I just want to throw this out. He graduated college late, so he was 23, just so you know.
Wow.
Okay. Very mature 23. Wow. Very world-renowned.
Anyway, look. But I remember his first car before he got a job was a Tesla. And I was like, that is like a $600 monthly payment or whatever it was. Cause this is before the Model 3, which I still don't even know if that's out. This is when the car was like 55, 60 grand. And he's like, you know, once I get my job, it'll be fine. And I was like, okay, oh boy. And I remember at that point thinking like, okay, so Tesla's really come into its own in that, like, it has become this like, you know, foot in the door status symbol of, you graduate college, you can't afford it, but you're going to get a Tesla. And there's, there's a brilliance to that. I will say.
But it also traps you within that world too, because, like, you know, especially for a lot of people who are just working class people or young people or whatever it is, when they get into a leasing program with cars, you kind of for years stay within that leasing program, meaning that, like, they want to incentivize you to stay and keep leasing from that company. Yeah. But with something like Kia, well, then I have at least options to go with Kia or a Hyundai, or like I have an options of the brand. Whereas with Tesla, it's like, nope, you only got Tesla. So you're going to be paying an expensive thing for the rest of your life for as long as Teslas are expensive. And yes, there is a base model that is, I mean, that is basically the exact same price that my Kia Niro EV was. But that said, I feel like I get more out of my Kia because it's like, it's just normal. Also, I'm not worried about anyone coming and like trying to break into my car.
Yeah.
Why? There's not stuff to take?
Well, no.
It's not you're saying because you drive a Kia, no one gives a fuck. Because
I drive
about
a fucking
Kias.
Kia, no one gives a fuck about my fucking car. Whereas
aren't
if Kias I drove
like
a Tesla.
Aren't Kias like the most stolen cars in LA?
Well, there was like an old model of Kia that there was a thing going on in LA about how you could like rewire something, but you can't do that on an electric car because there's no like key, basically. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like there's no thing. So there
Kia
was like
challenge.
A thing where they were doing that, but it'd have to be like the gas Kia cars. But regardless, if I'm a rapper and if I think someone's going to be able to like, you know, buy an expensive handbag that I want that may be left in a car, I'm going to break the window of the Tesla over the fucking Kia any day. You know
sure.
what I mean?
Yeah. There yeah. you go. That, you know, robbing That's cars 101.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
I'm not a fan of JoJo Siwa. The only thing she ever writes in response to my comments is, okay. That's all she says.
My aunt Joanne would say, you know, we know we like to buy a foreign car. We don't like to buy American, but we never buy Volkswagen.
Yes, that's right.
It's a general rule.
Yeah.
How about Aunt Anne?
My Aunt Anne would completely disregard the conversation was actually about JoJo Siwa and say, I support that Miley Cyrus because her grandmas are Dolly Parton and that lady from Mama's Family.
Vicky Lawrence. Who?
Vicky Lawrence. But she would confuse it because it was on Hannah Montana that Vicky Lawrence played Hannah Montana's
grandma. Wow.
Grandma, excuse me. And then Dolly was the godmother and like or
oh yeah, got it. Got
I think
it.
Vicky Lawrence is the funniest punchline.
Oh my god, I am dying. So we did
I love
on the
Vicky
next,
Lawrence.
Wait, is it yeah, on the episode of Golden Girls podcast that as of this goes out, that came out yesterday, we did an episode of about Mama's Family. It
wow.
is so good, and I am wow. determined. I am determined
I did not like that show.
To get Oh,
Me
I
either.
Love that show. I loved that show wow. on so many levels. It is so fantastic. And I'm determined to get no. Vicky Lawrence on Out on the Lanai, a Golden Girl.
You should.
Final.
I bet she's
going
do
to.
I follow her.
I
follow her.
I disagree. I bet you wouldn't.
No, I followed her pretty early on Instagram, and she's pretty available for stuff.
Yeah. 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 yeah no, I think right. she will. Yeah. Yeah. That's I haven't done the reach out yet, but I'm going to do
I've
it.
I've never been you wrong. Should. So, anyway.
Bye bye.
Okay.